Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the first episode, a conversation with Dean Susan Fournier, where she answers the question at the heart of the show.
From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. There's a podcast for that, and that, and for that too, and that other thing as well. With more than 700,000 podcasts to choose from and at least 29 million individual episodes, listeners can face podcast decision paralysis when it comes to finding what to listen to next. Now, while some are wondering if we've hit peak podcast, others are saying the industry is only just getting started. Spotify is planning to spend $500 million on podcast-related acquisitions. Apple might start bankrolling original shows too. So this hour on Point, the big business of podcasts. And you can join us. Is podcasting here to stay? What keeps you listening or makes you tune out? How do you figure out what to listen to when there are 700,000 options and counting available? And also, what do podcasts bring to you that you don't get or you can't find in other media? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Well, joining us first today from New Haven, Connecticut is Nicholas Kwa. He is the proprietor of Hot Pod Media, where he writes, edits, and publishes the leading trade newsletter about the podcast industry. He's also a contributing writer to New York Magazine and to Vulture, where he covers podcasting. Nick, welcome to On Point.
How's it going?
It's going great. It's great to have you. And I'm going to put my shameless plug in here for the On Point podcast as well, which you can subscribe to wherever you get your podcasts. Okay. But Nick, first of all, let's just start with the this New York Times article that's sort of had put the podcast world in a bit of a tizzy in the past couple of days. Headlined, Have We Reached Peak Podcast? You're one of the most knowledgeable people about this industry. What was your response to the Times asking this question?
You know, I love the takes. I just love the takes. anything that generates like a strong response obviously touches upon sort of longstanding sensitivities and sort of questions of that people in that community have been having. It is the piece captures a feeling for sure, but the sort of underlying analyses of the way the podcast ecosystem is structured, the way we should think about it, the sort of fact that it has more than one kind of participant in the space, it kind of glides over a lot of those technical aspects of it. But, you know, for all of its sort of like shortcomings and the way in which it rankled some people in the podcast community, it did gesture towards this feeling that I think culturally lots of folks are just aware about and are feeling right now.
So what is it that – what part of the analysis rankled the podcast community? Because I – you know, just from the perspective of regular everyday listeners, of which there are millions of podcast listeners, we've just got all these comments coming in who say – someone saying, podcasts remind me of cable TV, 500 channels and nothing worth watching. Eleanor Spence says podcasts like web pages vary in quality and usefulness depending on who's producing and editing them. And Jane says, I like podcasts a lot, but I agree there are too many. So it seems as if, you're right, it's capturing a feeling. So why were podcast producers rankled by it?
I think, so I let's set that question about why folks are rankled and just sort of like address the structural reality of it. Podcasting, the state of nature of this medium is overabundance because it is an extension of the internet. Specifically, it's an extension of blogging. The whole premise behind the creation of technology about 15 years ago is that it increases the means to access for people who previously could not publish audio to an audience or to the world and gave them the means to do it. And so much like the rest of the internet, like the state of nature is that there's a lot of those things. And so – but, you know, the story of podcasting the past couple of years, particularly the past almost decade, is that there's been this sort of structure of business and industry growing on top of this sort of like wide ecosystem of people just publishing stuff. And I think what we're experiencing, what we're seeing right now is this tension between this sort of creator-led notion that anybody can publish, and that's the point of this medium, and the sort of consumer-centric sort of focus of this, which is these things are, at the end of the day, products, and people would like access to things that they feel it's worth their time. And so it's a bit of a harder consumer choice app-like system to navigate a universe of 700,000 podcasts and try to figure out what's the right one for them. And so we're in this sort of interesting transitional period for sure.
Okay. Well, so I mean, I would agree. I think we've seen in other, as you just said, in other media, this sort of life cycle of this burst of entrance into this space because of the democratic nature of any digital development. And then the quote-unquote shakeout that happens. So is this the right time for the shakeout to happen in the world of podcasting?
It really depends on what you mean by a shakeout, right? Okay. So from where I sit and what I've been sort of observing for the past couple of years, it seems that we're heading towards some sort of bifurcation, that there will be a separation between podcast operations and teams publishing podcasts that are very much oriented towards, you know, building a business around it to drive big audiences, to drive meaningful audiences, and to extract either advertising or subscription value from it. There is a layer of that formalizing over the past couple of years. And the question is sort of what happens to the other chunk, which is this notion of self-publishing, of anybody having access to just being able to publish an audio recording out and maybe getting some listeners for it. The sort of podcasting is a technology and tool for self-expression. And so I do feel that if there is a shakeout, or however you want to frame it, it's going to be along those terms. Who gets to be in the quote-unquote money-making industry side of it, and who gets to sort of participate in the sort of broader self-publishing part of it?
Right. So are you saying that does part of you hope that we'll never fully let go of the idea that just because someone talks, somebody out there might find it interesting?
Maybe it's by virtue of my predisposition or sort of the moment in time I was born in, but I always feel that whenever there's more opportunity for more people to access potential audiences, it's always a good thing. I think the fact that we have an abundance of podcasts, maybe too many, is, you know, it's a net positive because it allows people who previously didn't have access to, you know, radio broadcasts. Like if I was a certain kind of person, or if I have a certain kind of idea for a radio show, an audio show, on broadcast radio, I need to, you know, go through NPR or go through Cumulus Media or iHeartMedia. Mm-hmm. And maybe I'm not the right demographic, or I'm not the right kind of sensibility that fits with those gatekeepers. And so, you know, I'll take this overabundance over a smaller option of access any day.
Yeah, agreed. But of course, from the listener perspective, the question is, it gets ever harder to find the quality content, even as it diversifies as well. But, you know, we're going to dig into sort of the business and development aspect of the burgeoning world of podcasts. But I do want to get your take on what it is about this particular medium that so many people are drawn to. And in order to just kind of launch us into that part of the conversation, let's just take a moment to listen back to Serial, of course, which debuted in 2014, an investigative journalism series. The first season focused on the case of the 1999 murder of 18-year-old Haemin Lee. Now, Serial remains one of the most listened to podcasts in the world, with seasons 1 and 2 downloaded more than 340 million times. And here's a moment from season 1.
This is a global call link. Prepaid call from
Adnan Sayed,
an inmate at a Maryland correctional facility.
From This American Life and WBEZ Chicago, it's Serial, one story told week by week. I'm Sarah Koenig.
So that's from season 1 of Serial, and of course the very familiar sound driven by the wild success for many, many years of This American Life and WBEZ in Chicago. And we're going to talk about the very commercial podcast as well. We're not going to just focus on the public radio sound here. But Nick, what was it about podcasts like Serial that really sort of blew open the doors to this medium and drew people, millions of listeners in?
I'll give you three versions of this answer. One is, you know, radio, you being a practitioner of it, it's still a very powerful medium, right? But the sort of added edge here is the fact that as a consumer, you can listen to a narrative like that, or a radio sort of, or an audio show like that on your own terms. You can go back and forth. You can start episodes and stop it whenever you like. So that, just on a baseline level, is a thing that's really important for that kind of radio experience, and specifically that kind of narrative experience. The second thing here is, you know, there's a way in which just the audio experience plays on the human imagination. There's a way in which just the sound of it sort of triggers an emotional relationship. The key buzzword is like intimacy. But this notion of it's a participatory, medium in which the consumer's mind or the listener's mind has to sort of create the images for themselves. Mm-hmm. And that's really powerful. But I think the real, at least for me personally, it's a feeling that this media product is just for me. It's always, it's this feeling that, like, I am in this sort of story. I'm in this crowd of people talking. I'm in this sort of narrative experience, somebody telling me a story, and it's just me. And there's something very personal to that feeling. There's something very one-to-one, and it stands in contradistinction to the way broadcast radio works, in which it's one-to-many. And so all those things put together kind of comes in this package of something both really, really human and really, really personal. And I think that's the sort of through line through a lot of the popular podcasts that we see kind of blow up.
Interesting. So one-to-one versus one-to-many. Very fascinating analysis. Okay, so Nick, stand by here for just a second because I want to bring into the conversation now Greta Cohn. She joins us from New York. She's founder of Transmitter Media, a creative podcast company. She was formerly executive producer and head of new show development at Earwolf and Midroll Media, other podcast developers. And she launched a number of podcasts through those companies as well. And she joins us again from New York. So Greta Cohn, welcome to you.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing very well. So you are a producer of podcasts here. What do you make of this moment that the industry finds itself in? Is it sort of on the cusp of an even bigger breakthrough, even more explosive growth, or are we at the peak stage?
I think we're at still a beginning stage, like Nick says. I think we're still about to see bigger and better and more. I can't tell you how many inquiries I get from folks, especially now in TV and film, who are really interested in getting into podcasting. I think we're seeing many more media outlets wanting to get into podcasting. A big part of our business at Transmitter is partnering with other media organizations who have stories that they want to put out into the world. Lots of brands want to get into podcasting. I think that in general, there's a ton of ambition. I think the amount of shows that get the time and the space and the funding to go really big is still small compared to the number of shows that are coming out perhaps in like a faster weekly basis. Uh-huh. But I think we're still at the beginnings for sure.
Okay, well, we'll talk more about where the industry may go next. So Greta and Nicholas Kwa, stand by here for just a second. We're talking about podcasting. It's more popular than ever. More than a third of Americans over the age of 12 say they listen to podcasts. There are hundreds of millions of dollars being invested in the industry now, including from very big names like Spotify and Apple. And we want to hear from you. Are you a regular listener to a podcast? What are your favorites? What draws you in about it? Or are you just overwhelmed by the hundreds of thousands of choices already out there? This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/onpoint. That's Indeed.com/onpoint. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken?, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. These days, it's hard to ignore the debate over the role business should play in society.
There's crescendo around profit, period. Is profit bad? Is capitalism evil? These themes are out there.
Is this criticism of business warranted? And if so, how do we fix it? Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the first episode of the Is Business Broken podcast.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour about the booming world and industry of podcasts. I'm joined today by Greta Cohn. She's founder of Transmitter Media, a creative podcast company. She's with us from New York. And Nicholas Kwa joins us as well. He's with us from New Haven, Connecticut. He's the proprietor of Hot Pod Media, where he writes, edits, and publishes the leading trade newsletter about the podcast industry. And Nick and Greta, we've got lots of comments coming in here online from fans of podcasts. On Twitter, Joe Cull says, podcasting has opened up a space for some great learning opportunities. I can get weekly content from experts in niche fields. And Aaron Palicki says, I listen to podcasts almost every day. I can listen to things I'm interested in that aren't offered on my local radio or anywhere else. It allows the programs to also be portable. So Greta, you've been in this business for a while, and I just want you to sort of pick up a thought that we left off on before the break here. How much has it changed in just, say, the past 5 years about podcast production?
Oh, I think it's changed enormously. I mean, I think you point to Serial as a sort of watershed moment in the industry. And I think that we've seen a greater hunger for serialized, for deep storytelling. I mean, there is also a deep hunger for what that listener commented on, which is essentially like edutainment, right? Like, mm-hmm. we want to learn, we want to hear stories that help us enrich our lives and be able to operate in the world in a way that we didn't consider before. And we make a variety of those kinds of podcasts at Transmitter. But I think that we're seeing a greater investment all across the board in high quality podcasts.
So, Nick, what's your thought about that?
So I think what we've seen the past 5 years in particular, if you do want to use 2014 as sort of like the sort of pivot point there, there's just been a lot more talent coming to the space that previously wasn't there, and there's a lot more people who are native to the space that's taking more chances creatively. So we're seeing sort of a proliferation of a bunch of different formats and sort of the improvement of a lot of existing formats. Comedy podcasts have gotten sharper, better. Narrative podcasts have been pushed to tackle stories that are more interesting in more interesting ways. And, there are also sort of previously abandoned genres like audio drama sort of getting its moment to shine and its moment to have a revival, in which there's a community of fiction podcasters now really sort of testing themselves and pushing and trying to figure out what this new version of telling fictional stories over audio and radio sounds like. And so it's I think part of this is a result of the increased attention to the space. And it's a signal that if you have an idea or if you have a certain talent that you want to sort of work on, this is a space to do it. And I think the past 5 years has been a reflection of that.
Yeah. You know, I'm particularly interested in the resurgence or the rebirth of audio drama through podcasts. In my household, we just listened to an 8-part podcast from Gimlet Media for kids. Essentially, it was like a kid's audio drama, and my offsprings were rapt. And I just thought, you know, this just harkens right back to the golden age of radio in the 20s and 30s, where people were gathering around the radio to listen to dramatic storytelling, but it's being done, you know, through our phones now. So it does seem to be quite a rebirth or a sort of reconnection with a fundamental storytelling medium that has been in existence in the United States, or definitely worldwide, for some time. So Greta, do you see this as really capturing a completely new generation of people who may, in a few days, and I hate to say this, a few years, never even turn on regular broadcast radio because there's so much podcast content?
I think that's very possible. I mean, I think anecdotally, I hear that from people who, as Nick said earlier, you know, we can take these stories with us wherever we go, listen however we'd like, pause and restart or rewind if we want to hear something again. And so there's a way in which it's a very personal experience and you can, you know, interact with it in a deeply personal way. And so, you know, I think there's a reason why people often think of podcast hosts as their friends that they want to hang out with and spend time with. And it's because you have that like deeply personal access.
Mm. Well, let's go to the callers. Let's go to Maynard, who's calling from Jacksonville, North Carolina. Maynard, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Doing well. What's your favorite podcast?
It would have to be Serial.
And why?
There's something really engaging about it. I just enjoyed listening to it while I was working, and it was like I could take multiple information at once while just doing like the most simple task, stuff like that. And it really just paints a picture in your head, and you just think about it more. And it's only gotten better with each season that's going on.
Are you actively waiting for season 4?
With bated breath.
Well, Maynard, thank you so much for your call. Nick Kwa, do you have any insight as to when season 4 might come out?
I've only heard rumors, but I cannot confirm any of those details.
Okay. Let's go to Derek, who's calling from Madison, Wisconsin. Derek, you're on the air.
Howdy.
Hi. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to say real quick, because you guys were talking about whether or not it's going to go away, and I just kind of see this thing kind of like YouTube, where there's such low overhead, it's so easy to produce, to get started up, that I got to imagine it's just going to keep kind of growing in that way. And the reason that I love podcasts, and I've been listening to them for like over 10 years now, is because of the long format, like that you can kind of really get a deep dive into one subject that you never knew you would care about. And it's such a good job of humanizing it, because you hear voices, you kind of take away your preconceived notion of how someone looks or how old they are. And you really get to just appreciate the story. And it just really kind of takes you to a different place.
Yeah, well, Derek, thank you so much for your call. We got a lot of people who want to talk about podcasts. So let's get one more here. Roland is calling from Nashville, Tennessee. Roland, you're on the air.
Hey, Magda. Yeah, I'll just kind of throw a couple of suggestions out there and make a comment on the state of podcasting. I started listening with Serial Season 1, which is a great place to start if you're new to podcasting. Season 2 and Season 3, not so much. But Joe Rogan Experience, Stuff You Should Know, those are good outside of true crime. And then if you're a true crime fan, really, podcasting is your best friend.
Yeah.
It dominates the space.
Okay, so Roland, stand by here for just a second, because you mentioned Joe Rogan. He has the Joe Rogan Experience, a wildly successful podcast and video podcast, launched back in 2009. So he's a comedian and mixed martial arts commentator, has recorded, as far as I understand, more than 1,300 episodes. So let's listen to a moment from his podcast where he spoke with tech entrepreneur Elon Musk.
You must understand there's not a whole lot of human beings like you. You know that, right? To you're an oddity.
Seems, yes.
To chimps like me.
We're all chimps.
Yeah, we are.
We're one notch above a chimp.
Some of us are a little bit more confused. When I watch you doing all these things, I'm like, how does this have all this time and all this energy and all these ideas, and then people just let him do these things?
Because I'm an alien.
That's Joe Rogan talking to Elon Musk there. So Roland, what do you love about the Joe Rogan Experience podcast?
Like, for one, Joe is great at not interrupting his guest. He lets the person talk. It's as long as there's no set time limit either. So some of his episodes go even 5 hours. And he gets such a great array of guests, like from Elon Musk, who famously got Elon Musk high too, by the way. But from Elon Musk to Alex Jones to Jack Dorsey to anybody you can think of, they either have been on Joe Rogan podcast or they're going to go on there eventually, because he's dominating the space outside of, like I said, true crime.
Yeah. Well, Roland, thank you so much for your call. So, Nick Qual, let me turn back to you. There have been some critics of podcasts who say there are too many of just sort of the chatty type podcasts out there. But ones like Joe Rogan's podcast are very, very successful. And you heard the listener there saying that he loves them even when an episode goes for 5 hours. So what is Joe Rogan doing right that makes it so popular?
Well, part of it, I think he was a beneficiary of being an early adopter. Mm-hmm. He started his show like in 2009, which is right after the economic crash. And so there's this cohort of podcast interviewers or podcast like personality talking heads that started their shows during that era. So Marc Maron came up from that time. Bill Simmons started his podcast during that time. And so a lot of the sort of effects of this is just longevity, right? He's been now like making these episodes for almost 10 years. And, you know, so there's a community building aspect to it that comes up for persistence. He's also just a very very competent interviewer and very aggressive in the way he thinks about his community. He's a very, very specific kind of interviewer and person, definitely. He's also a flashpoint for criticism for the kinds of guests he brings on and the kinds mm-hmm. of communities he appeals to. And they're, you know, it's just one of those star qualities that has very, very complicated layers to it. So it's a combination of, like, you know, star power and you know, longevity there. It's a really interesting case study.
I guess the question is, could Rogan have experienced this kind of success in another medium? Or is there something about podcasting that he's really maximizing?
I think there's something about that specific medium, because there isn't a structural time limit to the length of the interviews he goes on. He has essentially full control over the nature of the interview he wants to put out. So and also, you know, the video podcasts do a fair bit of sort of viewership for them, mm-hmm. but I think the majority of their consumption comes through the audio format, and I think it's because you don't really have that visual layer that kind of interrupts and interrogates your experience listening to the conversation at interviews.
Yeah. You know, I heard our caller Roland say that he liked that Joe didn't interrupt people. And I get email every day from a listener who says, Meghna, you interrupt people too much. And let it be known right now, it's because I have to answer to a clock as well, it being live radio. But Greta Cohn, let me turn back to you here because, I mean, we could talk about the content and the different types of content, the different styles, the storytelling for quite some time. But I want to return to the fundamental question of exactly how this industry is booming at the moment, because it's booming in the number of podcasts. But a listener named Ian Barry says, how booming financially is it, though? So talk to me. Are you at Transmitter Media able to run a profitable company?
Yes, we are. I think the best equivalency to make is to the film and TV production business. So I think, you know, you ask whether the production company that made Arrival, right? Like, they're putting a lot of resources, they're storytellers, they have a team that is writing, that is editing, that is doing post-production. That is exactly the same thing that we're doing. You know, I started this business 2.5 years ago, and it was just me, and I have built very slowly, very intentionally. You know, we didn't take any investors. We're just responding to the demand in the industry, and doing it in what I think is a really sort of intentional way. I think it's my responsibility now to the folks who work for me and who produce for me to maintain a responsible and profitable business. I mean, are we like millionaires? No, but we're doing what we love, and we're able to do it every day, and we're able to work with people who we enjoy working with and whose stories we really want to tell.
Mm. And is the money coming through? You said it sounds like you do some branded content or branded podcasting, or is it advertising or sponsorship in your in the other types of stories that you tell? Since this is such a still relatively new and growing business, mm-hmm. where are the sources of income coming from?
Yeah, so there are multiple. Right now, we're mainly focused on client podcasts, although we're starting to open up our production to original in-house shows in the coming year. So the stuff that we're making right now is mostly funded by the folks that we're working with. So we work on a podcast with TED, and they fund the production of that podcast. Mm. You know, we've made a podcast for Spotify. We work with the New York Times. And so they pay the production costs. In the future, when we add original shows that we own, that we conceive of and create, then yes, then we'll move into the model where we're seeking advertising to help fund the production of those shows. So both of those. And we do branded podcasts. We do a few. And we treat them the same way that we do our storytelling and our media partner podcasts.
Okay. So Nick Kwa, then give us your take here about the financial moment that the industry is finding itself in. Because at the very beginning of the show, just hopefully to grab some people's attention, I mentioned that Spotify is spending hundreds of millions of dollars acquiring podcast companies. I mean, is that evidence that big players in media are finding podcasts as a place for a worthy place for investment?
Yeah. So to address this question, we also talk about like the primary business model that most podcasts operate in. And at this point in time, most podcasts are monetized by advertising. There is a annual report conducted by the IAB that sort of states that in 2018, podcasting as a whole brought in about $470 million in advertising revenue. And that's up from about $300 million from 2017. And it's projected, just podcast advertising alone, is projected to beat $1 billion in 2021. And so there is some thinking that advertising will remain the sort of predominant way that podcasting makes money moving forward in time. But we also see sort of secondary business models pop up. Live events, notoriously, is getting really important. I think there was an Axios piece that came out a couple of weeks ago citing data from a platform that sells tickets to live events, including podcast live events, that said that like podcast live events ticket sales grew like 2,000% over the past 5 or 6 years or something like that. And there are a couple of explorations over whether there can be subscription models properly implemented for podcasting. And, you know, a lot of the successful subscription or direct support models, they are largely just like specific to specific shows. And it remains to be seen whether we'll see the quote-unquote Netflix for podcasting at some point of time in the future. All of which is to say there is a lot of money movement. There's a lot of innovation around people thinking about the way to make money with this. And, you know, as more podcasts qualify into this sort of monetizing space, we'll probably see a lot more of these experiments play out over time.
Well, it seems to me that there's no reason why these different models can't coexist, right? That's what we're seeing in streaming video, because most people, if they might have a Hulu or Netflix or Amazon account, but they still may also go by discrete seasons of programs as well. I mean, I'm wondering, do we have a sense at this point in time, Nick, about how much people would be willing to pay for podcasts?
I think there is a willingness to pay for specific podcasts because you feel very connected to the personality, because you have a very specific attachment to that crew of creators or that show. So live events or live podcast shows are a very good expression of this. Merchandising is a very good expression of this. Also, there are more than a few podcasts that are primarily powered by Patreon, which is sort of a direct support or direct donation a model. The question whether people would pay for one service that has X or Y number of podcasts or certain kinds of podcasts remains to be seen. There are a couple of attempts at that going on right now. Luminary is one that's very, very deeply venture-backed that's playing itself out. There's a company, there's an app called Stitcher Premium, and so we'll figure that out over time, I think.
Okay, so Greta, we've got to take a quick break, but when we come back, I want to ask you about your opinions about subscription models for podcasts. But we are talking about the podcast industry. It is booming right now. As I've mentioned earlier in the show, more than a third of Americans over the age 12 say they listen to podcasts. There are 700,000 of them out there. It's a global phenomenon as well. We want to know what your favorites are, what you think of the podcast world. This is On Point.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour about the podcasting industry. It is booming indeed, but every time we see huge growth in a digital medium, we also begin to see some pushback. For example, the New York Times recently had an article asking if we're a peak podcast. Lots of comments coming in online. CL Fornari says, "What I love about podcasting is that there are no gatekeepers. The population of podcasters more accurately reflects the demographics of this country, and that's valuable." B. Leung says, "Being able to find specific shows tailored to your interest in narrative podcasts offering what is essentially radio plays for a new age. Podcasts are media on demand even before Netflix and Hulu were a thing." We're joined today by Nicholas Kwa. He's proprietor at Hot Pod Media, where he writes, edits, and publishes the leading trade newsletter about the podcast industry. And Greta Cohn is with us as well. She's founder of Transmitter Media. They produce podcasts as well. And Greta, before the break, we were talking about sort of different income models as this industry grows. And I just wanted to get your quick thoughts on what you think about the potential for subscription models for podcasts.
Yeah, I think we've seen a few entrants into this space over the last years, from Audible to Stitcher Premium, and now Nick mentioned Luminary. And these are all subscription-based services to access, you know, very particular content that was made for those services. They're not available anywhere else. And as a maker, I'm not sure yet how it's working, because and also as a listener, because I want the work that I make to be available to the broadest possible listening audience. And, you know, we have these individual silos, and I don't think that the listening audience is yet trained to go to HBO for Game of Thrones, to go to Hulu for Shrill, right? Like, to go to these individual streaming services for the shows that they're seeking. And so I don't think we're quite there yet in terms of these subscription services breaking through. I'm curious to see how it continues to evolve, but I don't think we're quite there yet.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised, though, if we do get there eventually, because I find myself paying for subscriptions for things I never thought I would, even just a couple of years ago. So who knows? But let's go to Tyler, who's calling from Luray, Virginia. Tyler, you're on the air.
Hey, how y'all doing?
Doing great. What's your thought for today?
Yes, ma'am. So coming from an independent podcaster, I co-host a show called The Conspiracy Hall with my sister. We basically talk about phenomena and lore and conspiracy and all that kind of thing. I wanted to basically say that podcasting as a creative medium is great for people like me who are passionate about strange and weird topics. We basically have a voice now where we know we never really did without being censored, like on YouTube. So basically, I think podcasting is great because you can have explicit content or non-censored content and kind of just spitball and say whatever you'd like, and you're going to have a demographic, and there's going to be an audience out there who will listen to you, whether it's small or big. I think we actually saw this in Joe Rogan's podcast, mm-hmm. like you guys were talking about. He basically says all kinds of crazy and fun stuff. He's actually had Alex Jones on the show, and people eat it up. So I just believe that podcasting is here to stay. And it's a great way for small and independent people like myself to actually have a voice.
Well, Tyler, thank you so much for your call. Tyler there with his podcast called The Conspiracy Hall, I guess. Tyler, thanks again. All right. I want to bring in one more voice into this conversation. Chris Richards joins us now. He's with us from Washington. He's the pop music critic for The Washington Post. And he recently wrote a piece headlined, "Are Podcasts Killing Music or Just Wasting Our Time?" And we have a link to that at onpointradio.org. So, Chris Richards, welcome to On Point.
Hello.
You know, I welcome all voices here, even ones who want to rain on the podcast parade. So tell us, you actually wrote in quite a lot of detail in the Post about you perhaps your less than positive view of podcasting right now. What do you not like about them?
I think to skeptical ears like mine, they feel very samey, very tedious. And I wouldn't chime in if it weren't being held up as like this vaunted new form of our time. Back in March, New York Magazine called podcasts, quote, the most significant and exciting cultural innovation of the new century. That's a huge claim. So I thought, why not take the listening that we apply to music, the skepticism and intricacy that we bring to listening to music, to the podcast world. And the thing that I kind of find is, you know, it's a lot of times the podcasters maybe, and the audience as well, are maybe thinking about podcasts more as a informational transaction than like a listening experience, if you will. And I just think if podcasts are asking for our most attentive listening, they must aspire to be the most worthy of it because they're taking away listening hours that are otherwise spent on music in my world.
Okay. So Chris, let me say here, I actually agree with a lot of what you're saying because I try to dabble in some podcasts here and there, and I can't believe I'm saying this because people have to listen to me talk, but I just can't listen to a couple of people sitting around like a bad microphone and just talking anymore and having a tinny podcast. But look, I mean, we all know podcasters out there who are spending hundreds and hundreds of hours meticulously crafting sort of almost multidimensional listening experiences that are doing exactly what you're calling for, providing a rich oral experience to go along with their storytelling or journalism or conversation. So that, come on, that is happening already, don't you think?
I do think to some degree, yes, in a small fraction of those 700,000 podcasts that we're talking about throughout this segment. But I think, you know, more than a decade into this format, we're still splashing around in the primordial sludge of podcasting. My hypothesis is that the podcasters who rise out of this massive throng of aspiring podcasters out there, they're going to be the ones who are thinking at the level that you're talking about, thinking about podcasting as a sonic experience. Think of the breadth of subjects and all the freedom that we've been talking about for this past hour. I don't hear that sonically, you know what I mean? In terms of like the form and the content, they don't seem to match up. The content itself can be all over the map, but the form feels so samey to me, and I'm just trying to encourage the world to think more broadly about that as listeners and as podcast creators.
Okay, so Greta Cohn, there you are, wading around in the primordial sludge of podcasts, and it's in their infancy. What's your response to what Chris is saying?
Well, Chris, let me send you a playlist. I have some great podcasts that I think you might like.
Would love to hear them.
You know, I have a background as a musician. I have a deep love for music, and I listen to music all the time. I also listen to podcasts all the time, and I listen to them in different ways. So when I want to listen to music, it's satisfying a particular need. When I want to listen to a story or hear a podcast host that I really connect with, that serves a different sort of need. So I think that these are, for me, they're two completely different mediums. And, you know, a lot of folks in podcasting come from music and think about storytelling in a very musical way. You know, we're thinking about, you know, in the way that we might think of a chorus and a bridge and how we're building towards an important moment. But I think that there is a lot of intention and craft in podcasting. It's not every podcaster's MO, you know, because as we talked about, like, it is a very democratic medium. But I do think that there's a place for music. I think there's a place for podcasts. And I think that there are really beautiful podcasts that could change your mind.
Mm. And Nick Kwa, do you want to chime in here?
Yeah, I mean, man, Washington Post podcasts, whew, they better get out of the primordial soup there. Yikes. Okay, so I think I'll say a couple things. One, it's interesting because if you frame this as a zero-sum game between music and podcasts, you know, I don't think that necessarily bears itself out. One of the sort of pillars of the thinking behind, and this is what we've understood from reporting, of Spotify investing in the podcast space is that as they see on their platform, users that consume podcasts on their platform tend to also consume music at like a higher rate. So there's just more engagement on the platform. So there's a bit of a feeling that it might not be sort of a zero-sum situation here. But I personally would like generally to challenge the notion of like, what we talk about when we talk about quality, I mean, what we talk about when we talk about the experiences that we seek for. I think one of the benefits of a situation of overabundance is that many different people's different interpretations or expectations of what quality is can be processed by that abundance. I personally am a huge basketball nut, and I would be more than happy to consume tinny hours of people talking about the Oklahoma City Thunder that's badly edited because that's, for me, that is my experience. That is something that, for me, I feel like it's something that I'm not getting anywhere else. It's a kind of quality I do not consume anywhere else. And so I would rather not apply a sort of very individualistic or a very specific form of interpretation of quality onto an ecosystem as wide and expansive as podcasting.
Mm-hmm. So, Chris, let me turn back to you, because as a rule in my life, I want to celebrate anyone who calls for people to aim for excellence here. And I hear that's part of your message. But don't we have this same tension between sort of volume in terms of the number of options and quality in music as well as podcasting?
Absolutely, 100%. There's a part of my essay where I write about this thing called Sturgeon's Law. It's this theory by the science fiction writer Theodore Sturgeon where he said 90% of everything is essentially garbage. I think if he had lived to the information age, he might go up to 99% of everything is garbage. I mean, that applies to music, to film, to television, and of course the things that I think are going to set themselves apart in this new landscape that we live in, whether it be music or a streaming television show or a podcast, is this idea that the content and the form are inextricably interlaced with one another, and they owe something to each other. And I just feel in podcasting, the speaking, the pacing, the editing, the scoring, there's so much unexplored potential still. Podcasts to me do not sound 1/1000th as disparate as music does. And of course, you know, obviously we have centuries of civilization to catch up on in that sense. We've been making music since we've been able to communicate. But I do think that, you know, the future is bright in that sense, and because the landscape to me as a listener seems so dark.
Yeah. Well, Chris, I have to say I really appreciate you coming on and injecting a little bit of dissonance in this conversation, because not everything is always 100% in agreement. So Chris Richards, pop music critic for The Washington Post, he wrote a piece called "Are Podcasts Killing Music or Just Wasting Our Time?" And we've got a link to that at onpointradio.org. Chris, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
All right, let's see if I can sneak in one more call here. April is calling from Evansville, Indiana. April, you're on the air.
Hi there.
Hi, go ahead.
I just wanted to comment that my daughter, who has high-functioning autism, she really enjoys podcasts. And there have been a lot of new podcasts available for younger children that have really been great for us. And I'm thankful that we have those available, and she can kind of get out of the screen for a while.
Mm-hmm. Well, April, thank you so much for that. I have time for another one here. April from Evansville, thank you. Let's go to Stu, who's calling from Pompano Beach, Florida. Stu, you're on the air.
Hi, Magna. Thanks for taking my call. So I host, 10 years ago, I started a podcast called Wine Talk with Stu the Wine Guru, and it's still available on iTunes. And the thing I wanted, the statement I wanted to make was, 10 years ago, there was no, nothing to look at as or listen to as an example of great podcasting. And I think there's been a tremendous learning curve over the course of that 10 years. Things sounded tinny back then, and now they sound a whole lot better. I think the key thing that we need to understand is that there are plenty of people out there doing things in the podosphere, if you will. And as the person that was talking earlier had mentioned, I agree, 99% of it is probably not that fantastic. And there's the 1% out there that people strive to be. And I think just the wine industry alone has changed. And I think people that have come on to wine podcasts, that being producers from all over the world, have really benefited from that in marketing their wines and getting their message out about who they are. And that's just the one thing I just wanted to say. And then lastly, I think Pete and Sebastian show as a phenomenal podcast for people who are interested in comedy. That's Pete Corielli and Sebastian Mascalco. Mm-hmm. That was my last statement.
Well, Stu, thank you so much for your call. Okay, so Nick and Greta, we've just got 3-ish minutes here left to go, and I want to peer into the future a little bit with both of you, because I think one could argue that when Apple decided to put a podcast app on every iPhone that it was going to sell and then that it sold, that's one of the things that really helped podcasting break through to the mainstream, because it became effortless to find them, right? You didn't have to like go through to various services or go through your laptop, et cetera, et cetera. So now that when we see Apple considering creating its own original content for podcasts, Nick, let me just start with you. How major is this for the industry?
I think the devil's in the details here. It really depends on what exactly the sort of bankrolling or the exclusivity of whatever these audio shows are going to be, where it's going to be placed, how it's going to be placed, and how it's going to relate to the way that the Apple podcast platform currently sort of looks like and feels like, and how it interacts with every other podcaster in the ecosystem.
You could imagine that Apple, it wouldn't be surprising if Apple privileged its own content when you go to the Apple podcast app.
There's definitely incentive to do so, for sure. There's always a business reason for everything. And, you know, the uncertainty and the possibility of the worst-case scenario is the thing that's sort of causing anxiety right now. But I do think that there is a permutation in which, you know, we can have our cake and eat it too, in which Apple can have its own exclusive podcasts while maintaining the relatively open ecosystem. But, you know, the fact of the matter is that change is inevitable, mm-hmm. And it's going to be complicated for everybody. Some people will lose, some people will gain, but this will happen. Whatever happens will happen.
Well, Greta, I imagine that for podcast producers such as you, having a company like Apple with the deepest pockets in the world might just be nothing but good news. Like, it's someone to sell content to.
Possibly. I mean, I think as Nick noted, we don't know yet what we don't know. So I think we all remain sort of curious to see what shakes out. But absolutely, that could definitely be a possibility.
Well, I'm going to wrap up this conversation there then with a note of measured hope, which I appreciate. So Greta Cohn, founder of Transmitter Media, a creative podcast company, joining us today from New York. It's been a great pleasure to speak with you, Greta. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And Nicholas Kwa, proprietor of Hot Pod Media. He writes, edits, and publishes the leading trade newsletter about the podcast industry. He also contributes to New York Magazine and Vulture, and he spoke to us from New Haven, Connecticut. Nick Kwa, thank you so much.
Thank you. This was really fun.
Well, On Point is produced by Anna Bauman, Justine Daum, Eileen Amada, Stefano Cutsonis, Allison Poli, James Ross, Alex Schroeder, Grace Tatter, and Adam Waller, with help from Alex Reese and Sydney Wertheim. Our executive producer is Karen Schiffman. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. And yes, one more shameless plug. Go to whatever podcasting app you get your podcast from and download the On Point podcast. Thanks so much. This is On Point.
Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. Listen on for a preview of one of the episodes featuring Susan Fournier, Alan Questrom Professor, and Dean.
So let's start this conversation with the title of the show, Is Business Broken? It's a provocative title and a question. Where did this come from? Why that question now?
We're in a big cultural moment where capitalism, business, market systems are really being scrutinized and debated, and the role of business with it. So I think the question is just on the table. It's on people's minds. It's in the news media. It's in conversations. I think there are growing voices, loud voices, especially among young people who seem increasingly to believe that business and maybe capitalism with it are harmful and create rather than solve problems for society. And what we do seem to hear are those loud voices, and they are very black and white. There are protagonists and the antagonists and the pros and the cons, and there's really no middle discussion. It's sort of like people for and against, and it's loud.
Right. For and against DEI, for instance, right? A battle at play.
Right.
The way you describe it and the way you describe the polarization, it makes it feel like very much of the digital age, right? It feels very much of today. Some of those arguments have been around, though, right? Is this criticism of business and this question, is business broken, is that a new question?
You are so right. It is not a new question. Schumpeter, he was a professor at Harvard, and he's also maybe one of the most influential political economists of the early 20th century. He called for the death of capitalism, the death of business, 100 years ago.
Okay. Wow.
And when he critiqued way back then, he said the very successes of capitalism would bring about its downfall because it would create values hostile to capitalism, and that this would particularly take hold among intellectuals who were critiquing. So there's a lot of that same kind of dynamic happening today, and that's 100 years old. But yeah, we've seen this kind of cultural fervor playbook many times in the past, often precipitated by big crises.
Find the full episode by searching for Is Business Broken wherever you listen to podcasts, and learn more about the Mehrotra Institute for Business, Markets, and Society at ibms.bu.edu.